Earlier today, China released a white paper regarding its position on the trade frictions with the United States. The Information Office of the State Council for the People's Republic of China released the report in order to clarify the facts about China-U.S. economic and trade relations, in order to clarify China's stance on the trade friction with the U.S., and to pursue reasonable solutions. With America and China having the largest economies in the world, and with China's economy on pace to pass the American economy in the next 10 to 15 years, what we are seeing could be a structural realignment of global markets. During this episode of Lessons from the Screen, we will look at this report. What does it say and what does it mean? Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trash, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious. And we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to. Welcome back to another episode of Lessons from the Screen, the show where we give you a review of whether or not any information that you can get from any particular screen of any particular kind is worth your time. We waste our time, our energy, and our brain power so that you don't have to. You're welcome. Lessons from the Screen is sponsored by PAX Inc., a black activist advocacy and think tank with the purpose of increasing the quality of life for black people in America through education, a culture shift, and economics. You can check them out at www.pactsinc.org. That's PAXinc.org. Leave a line, leave a comment, leave a tip, leave a donation, become a member, get involved, take a survey, do whatever you can to help them because they are doing whatever they can to help you. And on this show, we're going to be digging into this white paper. And I got to say before we get started that I haven't been able to find a lot of confirmed evidence that this is a factual paper, but it is sealed. So if it proves to be a hoax, I'll apologize later. So this document is broken down in sections, and we're going to break down our conversations of it into those same sections. So it starts with the foreword, and the foreword paints this picture of the United States and China's economic partnership, of a partnership that is humming along nicely until the election of Donald Trump, who has been, to our great surprise, contradictory, disrespectful, and offensive in shifting the government, the U.S. government, to a protectionist stance at the expense of the rest of the world. And that would be his American First policy. While none of this is wrong, including the parts about the Trump administration, it should be pointed out that China has historically been engaged in practices that were extremely detrimental to the United States and protectionistic in their own right. One clear example is the often touted issue of China as a currency manipulator. Now, a currency manipulator is when a country sells its own currency on foreign markets against other stronger currencies in order to keep or lower the value of their own currency. And by doing so, a country gains or maintains a competitive advantage when it comes to exports, being able to sell goods at a cheaper rate. And this is considered one of the most egregious infractions in global trade today. So, and for a long time, China was guilty of this infraction. Now, they aren't guilty now, and they haven't done it for a number of years. It still is something that people harp on. It's still something that people are kind of sore about. And it is something that flies in the face of the image put forward in the foreword. Another example would be intellectual property theft. And they address this in the document. But it has been reported that China would mandate that for companies to come to their country and access their market, the country had to offer up trade technologies, trade secrets. There have also been reports that they will let you in, get somebody in that could help you navigate their markets, and that person would steal your trade secrets or your technologies. So, and then the government would set up a government-funded Chinese equivalent and basically run you out of their country. So these are two of the biggest examples that showcase how things have not been fine and dandy, and how China has behaved in ways that were not beneficial to the U.S. or global economics. And while they no longer manipulate their currency, there are still plenty of reports that suggest that they do still, in fact, steal corporate technology, intelligence property rights, intellectual property rights. They still engage in corporate espionage, and they do still engage in government funded building and structuring of entities that can run foreign entities out of their country. Again, they address all of these things, these points in this document. So that's all there. But I mentioned those things because they do speak to the fact that the U.S.-China economic relationship was not just humming along in the way that this forward paints a picture of them doing so. There have been issues, and they have been significant. Now, the next section is about a mutually beneficial and win-win cooperations between China and the U.S. in trade and economy. Now, it says that economic and trade relations have developed steadily since the establishment of diplomatic ties between China and the U.S., with fruitful results achieved in trade and investments. China benefits remarkably from the strong synergy, while the U.S. also reaps extensive economic benefits from the opportunities and results generated by China's growth. It is self-evident that a sound China-U.S. economic and trade relationship is very important for both countries. Cooperation serves the interests of the two sides, and conflict can only hurt both. Now, this statement is true even with what I mentioned earlier. The U.S. relations with China is extremely important. All the way up until recently, we shipped nearly all of our trash and recycling to China, and the bulk of our antibiotics and other medical treatments we get from China. And this is just one example of the mutual benefit of the relationship. The U.S. is China's biggest buyer, and the U.S. ranks sixth in terms of imports to China. Now, this section is all about outlining the benefits of the trade agreement between China and the U.S., highlighting that the U.S. sends components and tools to China, and China sends finished products to the U.S. And this is something that China is referred to often in this document in terms of the complementary relationship that the two economies have with each other. It also makes the important distinction that is seldom made when talking deficits here in America, which is China is in a product surplus, a goods surplus with regards to trade with America, but they're in a services deficit, meaning that we buy more goods than we sell to them, but they buy more services from us than they sell to us. And it is important to point that out. And it's also important to point out the fact that even when you add in the services, we still have a debt with them, because the surplus that we have in services nowhere near accounts for the deficit that we have in goods. But I wanted to make the distinction on services versus good, because other countries that are routinely listed by Trump in this administration as having a trade surplus with us don't actually have a trade surplus when you factor in the services exports. Canada is one such example, as they are often attacked for having a trade surplus with us, when in fact their surplus in goods of $17 billion is eclipsed by their deficit in services of $25 billion. So if all you're looking at is our goods exports versus imports, then you will come to these conclusions that we're in the red in our balance sheet. You have to add in that services component. Now, America is also, and this is another reason why we should add it in, because America is also the world leader in service exports, which makes sense because we are a service economy and we are the largest economy in the world. China and many other countries are developing countries and developing economies that still focus on manufacturing widgets. And while we should never get completely away from manufacturing and production, it has to be noted that our economy is not a manufacturing economy, and that services can and are being exported at increased rates as other countries need those services in support of their manufacturing. Tourism, education, finance, web-based solutions, installations, maintenance, All of these and more are service exports. Tourism and education are a little different because people are coming to America, but services exports are something that we need to talk about more fully. Now, as we all know, China owns a considerable portion of the U.S. debt and has invested a nice chunk of change into the U.S. to the tune of over $1 trillion. The report rightfully points out how this links our economies. Essentially, if the U.S. falls, China takes a major hit and potentially falls with it, along with the global economy. It's kind of like investing all your money into a particular stock and then having that stock crash, kind of like during the Great Recession. So that is important to that we digest that. It's really important that we digest that because a lot of people think that China owns the U.S. They can just call in the debt, this, that, and the third. And it doesn't exactly work like that. Our economies are tied together. If China were to dump U.S. trades, first off, it would have to find somewhere to dump the U.S. bonds that it has, the U.S. securities and exchange notes that it has. It would have to find somewhere to dump them. And if it did dump them, it would more than likely absorb an extreme hit that it might not be able to absorb. The U.S. economy is just that much bigger than everyone else's. So this section is rounded out by pointing out the win-win scenarios and painting a total picture of mutual benefit to both nations. So then it moves on to clarifications of the facts about China-U.S. trade and economic cooperation. And it says economic cooperation and trade between the two countries is so huge, substantive, and broad-based with so many players that it is inevitable for some differences and friction to emerge. The two countries need to take a comprehensive perspective, keeping in mind their strategic interests and the international order, properly handle their differences by seeking common ground while shelving differences, and take practical steps to resolve their tensions. However, in its Section 301 report, in other ways, the current U.S. administration, Donald Trump, stigmatizes China by accusing it of economic aggression, unfair trade, intellectual property rights theft, and national capitalism. This is a gross distortion of the facts in China-U.S. trade and economic cooperation. It turns a blind eye to the huge progress China has made in reform and opening up, as well as the dedication and hard work of the Chinese people. This is disrespectful to the Chinese government and people, as well as incompatible with the real interests of the American people. It will only aggravate differences and tensions, which in the end will damage the fundamental interest of both countries. Now, it goes deeper in this section of the document and also refers to the Trump administration's focus on trade goods and says that the situation is unfair, unreasonable, and disrespectful. Now, it states that the relationship cannot be boiled down to whether or not there is a surplus or deficit in trade goods, and China shouldn't be blamed for that as it is a natural occurrence of U.S. economic decisions. The report argues that the U.S. had a $20 billion net benefit to trade or trade surplus when services and sales were taken into account. Now, their argument is that even though the U.S. had a $375 billion deficit in goods, the U.S. also has a $40 billion surplus in services and a $455 billion advantage in sales by U.S. companies in China versus Chinese companies in America. It then makes the assertion that the reason the U.S. has trade deficits is because it has a low national savings rate and high consumption. And it says that for the U.S. to maintain its economy, it must pull the savings of other countries through trade deficits, which I know that sounds crazy, but that's actually true. The U.S. does have low savings rates. And we all know saving is not a part of the American dream. That's not a part of what it means to be American. Saving is not it. Consumption is. So the U.S. does have a low savings rate, and it has had one since the 60s. And we all know that consumption is the name of the game in America, as I said earlier. And this means that the U.S. does not have any savings money to invest domestically, which translates to needing to acquire those funds from foreign markets, which roughly translates to trade deficits. Now, the key to solving the deficit problem, if we want to solve it, is to either reduce consumption or to increase savings. And in our case, it's probably a little bit of both. The document also goes in on the fact that the deficits are how the U.S. provides dollars to the globe as the global currency of choice, which does offer the U.S. major benefits, being the global currency. It also talks about policy changes that could be made. And it also says that the U.S. overstates its deficit by roughly 20% every year. In 2017, there was a gap of about $100 billion between the U.S. number of $395 billion and China's number of $275 billion. It also asserts that American companies hand over their trade secrets voluntarily, not as a result of some Chinese bully tactic. Now, in the next section, it goes on to talk about trade bullyism practices in the U.S. administration, Donald Trump. And as the key builder of the international economic order and a major participant in the multilateral trading regime after the Second World War, the U.S. should have taken the lead in observing multilateral trade rules and properly handling trade frictions with other WTO members. WTO stands for the World Trade Organization. Through the dispute settlement system within the WTO framework. This is what the U.S. government explicitly pledged to the international community. However, since taking office, Donald Trump, with a narrow focus on America first, and the new U.S. administration, it says the new U.S. administration, Donald Trump, has practiced unilateralism and economic hegemony, abandoned its international commitments, and provoked international trade friction around the world. This has not only undermined the interest of China and other countries, but also jeopardized the international reputation of the U.S. itself, and above all, has shaken the foundations of the global multilateral trading regime, which will ultimately hurt the long-term interests of the U.S. Now, I will say that the U.S. has largely followed the rules of the WTO. It has largely played, which is why it filed the form, the 301 that was mentioned to earlier in this document. But with that being said, the current administration, Donald Trump, has made several statements suggesting that they disagree with the World Trade Organization. They don't understand the purpose of it. They don't see why we need to be engaged in it. And there do seem to be statements being made in various mediums, as well as the new book by Woodward, Fear, that Donald Trump wants to pull the U.S. out of the WTO and collapse the WTO if he can help it, as well as NATO for that matter. So while the U.S. has done play ball the way it's supposed to, this document isn't necessarily wrong in saying that the U.S. has been doing things that, as a world leader, as an economic powerhouse, as the only superpower currently existing in the world, it should not be doing. So then it goes on to make a couple other points about the U.S. trade relationship, the U.S.-China trade relationship. It talks about how the U.S. unilaterally provokes trade friction on the pretext of U.S. domestic law. It talks about baseless accusations against other countries, industrial policies. It talks about long-arm jurisdictions and the sanctions against other countries based on U.S. domestic laws. And all of these are important when you're talking about domestic laws, because we're talking about the international community being looked at through the lens of the U.S. domestic laws. And of course, other communities have their own sovereignty, and while they might capitulate to international laws, they are damn sure not going to be okay with acquiescing to the demands of another nation and the laws of that nation, because nobody sees themselves as a subsidiary or a branch underneath the U.S. government. Everyone views themselves as sovereign nations, and they're going to protect their sovereignty. So moving forward, internationalizing domestic issues and politicizing economic and trade issues, which, you know, that's true, and we argue about that here all the time. It also says that the current U.S. administration, Donald Trump, is violating its own commitments. And it goes on to say that the U.S. government has taken extreme trade protectionist measures, which have undermined the international economic order, caused damage to China-U.S. trade and trade relations around the world, disrupted the global value chain and the international division of labor, upset market expectations, and led to violent swings in the international financial and commodity markets. It has become the greatest source of uncertainty and risk in the recovery of the global economy. And then it goes on, after making that damning statement towards the American society, American economy, and this current administration, Donald Trump, it goes on to make some statements about what China is committed to do. And it says, China is firmly committed to safeguarding its national dignity and core interests. China is firmly committed to the sound development of China-U.S. economic and trade relations. China is firmly committed to the reform and improvement of the multilateral trading system. China is firmly committed to protecting property rights and intellectual property rights, IPR. China is firmly committed to protecting the lawful rights and interests of foreign businesses in China. China is firmly committed to deepening reform and widening opening up. China is firmly committed to mutually beneficial cooperation with other developed and developing countries. And China is firmly committed to building a community with a shared future for mankind. And so that's the long and short of the document. 71 pages, over 20,000 words. It'll be up in this post where you can read it at your leisure, download it, do whatever you want. I'll say again, there is the caveat on this that I haven't really been able to confirm. So, you know, I'm taking it for what it is for right now. And if it comes out later that this is not true, not an accurate document, a hoax, if you will, then I'll come back later and apologize. Thanks to my wonderful wife for going ahead and saying, just do it anyway. And if it's wrong, apologize, because I wasn't going to do this. But with that being said, China, it's a good read, especially if you're into economics, especially if you're into foreign policy, foreign relations, if you're into what's going on with Trump. Everybody should be interested in the trade tariffs, because that's going to hit our pockets. If you're interested in any of these things, then this document is something that you should check out. And if it is true, and if it's a real document from the Chinese government, then they basically just dropped their nuts right on America's forehead and continue to make the case of them becoming the new superpower in the world and supplanting the United States as the ongoing economic might of this planet. So with that being said, I thank you guys for tuning in. Really happy that I was able to cover such an in-depth document in my time frame of less than 25 minutes. So, you know, round of applause to me. If you in your car or you wherever you are, give me a round of applause right now. I demand it, because I've earned it. I'll wait. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And with that being said, this has been an episode of Lessons from the Screen, and I will see you next time.
Lessons from the Screen, what we mean is we go through different documentaries to tell you what they gon' do. Give you our lessons, give them our blessings. If they trust, we tell you there is no second guessing. Knowledge is power, but time is precious, and we're here to keep you from them lessons. So sit back as we groove, giving you the review, so you only spend time on the docs that you need to.
Once again, I want to thank you for tuning in to Lessons from the Screen. Lessons from the Screen is brought to you by PacSync through the Freedom Train Network. You can find us on www.freedomtrainradio.com or on iTunes, Google Play Music, or Stitcher. Be sure to head to one of those places and leave us a review, and then be sure to head back to the website to let us know what you think about the show and communicate with us. Also, be sure to head to www.pacsync.org and show some love and support for our sponsors. PacSync is doing big things in the community and trying to do more, always trying to do more. So be sure to head to the website. That's www.pacsync.org. donate, volunteer, become a member, talk about it, whatever. They can use your support. And once again, they are doing great things in the community. As always, Lessons from the Screen has a frame of reference and perspective that is aligned with that of the Black community. The things that we look at, whether it be on the Trending Tuesday or the regular Lessons from the Screen show, will always be looked at from the Black perspective. So keep that in mind, because we need more minds shaped into that perspective and trying to do things that we need done for ourselves. So with that in mind, again, thank you guys for listening in. Remember to tune in to the Freedom Train Radio. We have the app that's available that you can get from the website. It's in the Google Play Store. Sorry, it's not available on iTunes yet. We have the live internet radio. And we have more shows coming up. Thank you. And I will see you guys for the next episode of Lessons from the Screen.